Welcome to Security Architecture Podcast, where we help cybersecurity professionals to stay ahead of the curve and ensure they are successful in their cybersecurity journey.
Hi, I'm Evgeny.
Hi, I'm Dimitri.
We have here Jim from Forcepoint. Jim, can you please introduce yourself?
Hi, glad to be here this afternoon. My name is Jim Fulton. I'm with Forcepoint. I'm the solution director for SASE and Zero Trust Solutions.
Great. Jim, can you tell us quickly about Forcepoint, what they do and who they are?
Sure. Forcepoint is one of the largest private cybersecurity vendors out there. We are one of the global leaders in user and data protection and deliver a wide variety of solutions from a cloud-based platform that brings all the things that you usually think about in those types of environments, you know, from data protection, user and behavior analytics, as well as, you know, a range of other things that we'll talk about today that really are focused on how you connect people to that data and how you protect them no matter where they are. You know, these edge protection solutions really are, you know, the foundation of our SASE solutions.
Well, let's start with our questions. What's the name of the offering addressing the outbound browsing?
Right. So our SASE platform is known as Dynamic Edge Protection, and it's delivered from a new cloud-native platform that we have been building for quite a while now. You know, unlike a lot of vendors, we really set out to build a purpose-built platform, not just to take existing products and shove them up into the cloud and rehost them and slap the SASE label on them. So we've been creating this platform in parallel, talking with Gartner and other analysts for about 2 years now. And so when the name SASE came about, it you know, not coincidentally also matched a lot of what we had been doing, because we and Gartner, and in fact probably all of the other companies who are going to be participating in your series, saw the same need out there from customers. You know, to really move security into the cloud.
I would call it Dynamic Edge Protection or DEP.
Correct. And we usually go by DEP.
DEP.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. I wanted to make sure. Thank
now,
you.
Now, SASE capture a lot of different functionalities. And I know beside the outbound part, you have other options. So just quickly tell us about what else you do in the SASE portfolio.
Right. So SASE really is about bringing together four major categories of security and unifying them. So it's not just about delivering them as a service, but really finding ways to make them better than the sum of the parts. So, you know, while many people think of it as web security, because that was one of the original cloud delivered security services, it also brings network security, cloud access, or more generally application access security, and data security together. And it's that unification of the web security, the network security, application security, and data security that makes SASE really so interesting. Because in the past, people have always had to stand up multiple products, and whether they were delivered from the cloud or whether they were on-premise, there were still separate consoles, there were separate sets of policies. Where SASE is going is really about saying, no, you should be able to express one policy that captures essentially the business rules that you're trying to implement, so that you can, for example, have controls based on, you know, things in the network, upon what applications you want to access, regardless whether they're internal or up in the cloud. The ability to, you know, do things like data loss prevention or DLP on the data that's flowing among all of that. And so it's really about creating something that's greater than the sum of the parts.
Great. Tell me a bit about the maturity. because there's a lot of stories on the wire, companies moving boxes to the cloud, just spinning VMs. So tell us a bit about the DEP maturity.
Sure. So SASE overall is a relatively new phenomenon. Now, there are companies out there that are slapping the name SASE on existing offerings. But early on, even Gartner was saying, no, that's not the idea. The idea is really to create something that's cloud native that really works. Now, most companies are drawing on mature technology, but how you integrate them is really key. As I mentioned, we've been working on dynamic edge protection for 2 years now. You know, it is live. We have initial customers in several different countries that are using it day in and day out, providing protection. And what the approach that we're taking is really to take the existing technologies that we have that are delivered in a wide variety of products. And these are very, very mature technologies that are proven out, you know, literally in thousands of customers around the world, and extracting the key pieces, decomposing them, to use a culinary metaphor, so that, you know, it's not just about, say, putting a firewall up in a VM. It's about breaking that apart, extracting the firewall pieces, the IPS pieces, you know, the internal connectivity pieces, the application control pieces. If you've got a secure web gateway, pulling out the URL filtering, the scanning of web-based content.
Yeah, we'll talk about this later on. You have a lot of questions about the deep controls. Yeah. Great.
So it's all about decomposing that and then weaving them together in new ways to really deliver that unified policy concept. And that's really the single most important thing about SASE is this notion of having unified policies. And that's right. the focus that we've had and why, you know, we've been working to really build a new platform and not just try to bolt, you know, other things onto the side.
Very interesting. So this brings me to how do you license the product? Is it based on users, seats, devices, concurrent connection? Do you have any charge for excessive bandwidth or anything like that?
So right now it's a simple per user per year subscription. We offer a couple of different models, from an enterprise level agreement that a, you know, growing number of our sort of larger customers are using, that provides access to DEP as well as our, you know, a portfolio of other sort of purpose built services and products, ranging from so web security gateways to firewall technology to CASB, DLP, and user analytics and things like that. So the big thing is what we're seeing is customers are really asking for very simple subscription-based models that are predictable. And that's perhaps the most important attribute. And that's one of the ones, is if we double-click into this, where we looked at a variety of different models, including bandwidth, including per site. And ultimately, we kept coming back to per user, because that's what customers said, look, I need to be able to plan year to year what it's going to cost me. And so having things that could vary really were showstoppers for them.
If I have multiple devices, what can I do? Is it still same license or no?
So it's per user. So we don't care how many devices you use. And, you know, we think that moving forward, that will become the model, because everybody is using multiple devices. And it also ties into the fact that, and perhaps this is more, you know, an aspect of what makes Forcepoint different, is we don't see this just as sort of simple, you know, keep the bad guys out, you know, threat protection. We actually see this as part of a continuum of different types of security that, you know, incorporate user behavior. And we'll talk more about that during the session, because this is one of the things that really we're doing differently from everybody else out there in the market. And so when you start doing that, you very naturally get to, you have to be able to think in terms of people rather than in terms of devices.
Great. Let's jump to the architecture. If you want to share a screen and tell us about the bigger picture, how your cloud is working, how the high availability is working. It's always interesting to go to this big view, and then we're going to jump down to the more nitty-gritty details.
What really drives the approach that we've taken is the fundamental notion of SASE is about convergence. It's about bringing together a variety of different capabilities, as we talked about, and bringing them into the cloud so that you no longer have to really juggle multiple consoles, multiple types of policy mechanisms, and instead to really have sort of one way of expressing the way that you want to do business, to expressing those business processes through technology, instead of having to force your organization to change how it does business in order to deal with the security. So Forcepoint, as I mentioned, has built a cloud native platform that really brings together a variety of different capabilities that are used to power several different cloud native solutions that we call dynamic user protection, dynamic data protection, and dynamic edge protection. And so today we'll be talking most about dynamic edge protection, but the essence of all of this is to really use not just threat intelligence, but to use behavioral intelligence to really enable a new way of looking at security. And one that allows you to make judgments, not in the old fashioned static black and white style of this is always allowed and this is always blocked, but actually to get to where you can say, Dimitri is generally trusted, so we're going to allow him to work. We're going to allow him to access Dropbox, or we're going to allow him to copy data around. But over time, if he happens to engage in risky behavior, click on links in email that are corresponding to dodgy sites, or copying data at 2 a.m. when he never logs in after 10 p.m., then being able to have this notion for every user of the level of risk that they present, in essence, to really score that level of risk and to ultimately allow policies to be expressed in terms of risk so that as his risk goes up, the controls that you place on the use of that data on the access to applications and other places, can be governed by, is this a low risk user or is this a high risk user or is this somewhere in between? So that instead of that black and white all or nothing, you're able to do things like, well, okay, now we're going to increase audit logging. Oh, now maybe we're going to boost it up and perhaps even do desktop capture to understand what's happening in a given moment. Ultimately, getting to the point where if someone really is engaging in risky behavior, of course, providing the ability to block access. But at that point, what we've done is changed the focus of security from how do you go out and be sort of the Mr. No, no, you can't do that, to instead staying out of the way of people who are trusted, who are doing their jobs, and then providing the right information and the right trail to be able, to really show when people do things that are inappropriate, whether it's on purpose, whether it's by accident, or whether it's not even them and it's, for example, some piece of malware hijacked their credentials and was doing it, trying to mimic them. It gives you that ability to provide productivity that doesn't get in the way, so that you're able to eliminate security friction. So some of the things that make Forcepoint different is that, this cloud platform, it really is being developed to ultimately be delivered, from multiple cloud platforms, Today, we're using Amazon Web Services for that cloud platform, supplemented with our own global network of cloud data centers around the world. You know, then integrating in technology for providing visibility and control throughout networks. We have some of the industry's first true SD-WAN technology that we've developed over the years. And we also have endpoint technology that brings together many different capabilities from data protection and enforcement of data policies to providing context to the network controls for being able to understand, for example, what program is actually requesting access to the network so that our firewall capabilities, for example, are able to know not just, okay, this is coming from Ev's laptop, but it was actually coming from this particular old version of a browser that we really don't want to allow usage. Or if it's coming from a kiosk where the only thing you want to allow to communicate off of that particular network might be the point of sale .exe software. But if something else then tries to communicate off network, you're able to shut it right down. Then applying that behavioral intelligence and threat intelligence to really power a variety of different capabilities in the middle that are managed altogether. Yeah.
So you would leverage the knowledge of the behavior to have from the agent, and you will correlate that with what you say the firewall. That's what you're saying.
So we have behavioral intelligence capabilities that today power some of the most sophisticated insider threat and user activity monitoring solutions out there in the industry, and protecting millions of desktops in some of the most mission critical environments in the world. And what we've done is we've taken that technology and combined it with some really cool analytics technology to create this system for doing risk scoring. So we're able to take telemetry from a variety of different environments, physical systems such as your door locks, your other sensors, as well as a wide variety of digital feeds, not just from control systems such as our own applications and security systems, but other systems as well. Also to be able to then work with things like third-party identity providers like Okta and Ping, so that what we're able to do is build up this model for understanding the relative level of risk that each individual is posing at any given moment, and then use that as one of the optional factors in expressing policies. And so this is a very different approach. It's one that today we're already delivering for doing data protection, so that you can do this risk adaptive approach to protecting data. And we're bringing that same risk adaptive approach to our dynamic edge protection SASE platform. So you'll be able to provide the same way of protecting access to applications, to websites, to any network site out there, not just based on, this is a blacklist, this is a whitelist, but for all of the stuff in the middle, the gray area in the middle, being able to take a risk-based approach instead of the old-fashioned static approach. It's going to be very powerful.
Everything you have mentioned is happening in real time, right?
Yeah, it operates in near real time, and it's all automated. And in fact, that's one of the keys to this is that when you take a different approach to security, you can't make it rely upon manual actions, because you there's just too much data flowing through, and that's particularly important for Forcepoint, because our focus really is on sort of mid to very large enterprises. So our customers typically are anywhere from thousands of employees up to hundreds of thousands. And so we design everything really for global scale and global manageability. So it really has to be automated.
Do you have a reverse proxy solution as part of your offering when I can actually use it without any agent?
So we have that in our CASB capabilities today and using that very widely. We're going to be bringing that into the platform, and especially for enforcing data protection policies up in applications. That's becoming one of the critical ways for doing that. We're also going to be providing both the ability to access the security for our SASE dynamic edge protection from managed endpoints that have our unified endpoint agent software, but also we will be providing a forward proxy that, you know, people who have BYOD devices will be able to connect to, and then reverse proxy for the cloud-based application data enforcement as well. That'll just be part of the platform.
You mentioned that you are in AWS and you private data centers. Can you elaborate more about your cloud presence in general? Like if I am in Europe, located, sure, and I need to connect to US or vice versa, how the traffic will flow?
So Forcepoint has a global network of 160 points of presence spread across almost every continent. Except for Antarctica, and the penguins are lobbying to get us down there as well. But we run dozens of data centers around the world where our web proxy capabilities are also some of our cloud-based email systems and email security operate, and that work in tandem with public cloud environments like AWS and Azure to all sort of work together to deliver a variety of different capabilities. So today, people typically will use, say, a secure web gateway in the cloud that's powered out of one of those global data centers based on where they are, working in tandem with our points of presence, which are located in partner networks all throughout the world to provide a localized experience as well as a sort of faster route directly to the cloud services. Moving forward, we really see the way that platforms like this are delivered being a true multi-cloud type of delivery, that you're probably going to see sort of stacks such as ours that it may live in AWS, some of it may live in Azure, some of it may live in an MSSP's own data centers for their subscribers. We also anticipate that ultimately we may even see certain large customers who want to have this running on their own private cloud environments in-house within their own network. Even those who are moving to a true sort of zero trust style network. We see lots of others who are still interested in having this sort of stack sort of within the bounds. That's one of the things that to us is really, really interesting about this approach, is that ultimately you have to have a lot of flexibility because there is no one cloud. Nobody has all of their assets and resources up in the cloud. Every organization that we see still has some applications, some data running inside data centers on the inside of their network somewhere, just as almost no organizations, with just a very few exceptions, are 0% cloud. Everyone's in the middle. So in essence, we're really in a hybrid world. And that's one of the things that Forcepoint also really focuses on, is the ability to really operate in a hybrid world. And so by that, what I mean is the ability to have all of these different types of security that can be delivered in a way that all of the enforcement is done through the cloud. So an example of that is we have customers who are using DEP to secure branch sites where they don't want to roll out any security hardware. They want to simply use the router that their ISP provided to send that traffic up to the cloud, where all of the firewalling, all of the URL filtering, all of the web content inspection, and so forth is done in the cloud. As we talk to CISOs around the world, they often tell us, okay, I really like that idea, and especially since it also applies to roaming users who taking their laptops, you know, outside of the traditional company boundaries and being able to have the same web security and email security unified together for those people without requiring yet a different technology stack. But often they'll then ask us, well, what about that really works well for about 90% of my sites. All right, but what about these couple of examples where, you know, for example, I've got sites that have to be up 24/7, no exceptions. I use SD-WAN technology with multiple ISP links, possibly even some MPLS legacy lines in there. You know, how does that fit? And one of the things that's really cool about SASE is that it is actually, you know, designed, especially our implementation of it, is designed specifically for hybrid worlds where you want that connectivity to be able to be managed on site, or more explicitly, not to be managed, but to be executed on site while the management plane resides up in the cloud. And in fact, you can take that a step further because, you know, often as we deal with especially larger customers that have, you know, they may have financial data in one place or other types of compliance control data somewhere else, where they're saying, look, I need to have enforcement at this particular site because there are particular data sovereignty, you know, laws that mandate local controls. And I've got auditors who come up and tell me, look, I need to be able to physically put my hand on the thing that's protecting that data. Show me where to put my hand and don't just wave about it being up in the cloud. And so for those cases, having the ability for the cloud to delegate that enforcement, you know, to, you know, a device, essentially a black box that is hanging off of the cloud, becomes really important. And this is one of the aspects that Forcepoint is really focused on, is to be able to really treat hybrid environments in a completely seamless way so that you don't care whether enforcement is happening, you know, on the ground or up in the cloud. And that's one of the things that will also be, you know, really setting us apart from a lot of other players out there.
How you would scale for customers' demand? And I'm sure that you experienced it recently with COVID-19, having most of the workforce transitioning to work from home.
Yep. And in fact, we've been working with a lot of customers in the last 3 months, in part because we have VPN-based technology that a lot of them are using to connect their home users. We have a lot of people who are now using our technology to provide access to internal applications without VPN clients, sort of the precursor to zero trust network access. We see this now as a permanent, we can back up a little bit here. We see this as a part of the new normal, that ultimately organizations are going to have a mix of people in, you know, buildings, because there's still a lot of things where that's the most efficient way to operate. They'll have a mixture of remote sites because people are inherently social. You know, they do enjoy working together in normal times, just not necessarily in large centralized buildings that change how they live their lives. But now we're going to also see large proportions of the workforce truly being work from home or work from anywhere. And so the ability for a security system to handle those, you know, remote workers or roaming users seamlessly is no longer a feature. I mean, that's just a fundamental gotta have of any security platform. And so it's one of the first use cases that in fact we're addressing with dynamic edge protection, as well as other parts of the products and solutions that we deliver today.
How would you make the user experience faster and better? If I'm the end user and I'm using your product to access the protected web sites or systems, how would you make it secure, faster, and seamless for me?
And I'm glad you added seamless at the end, because the first priority has to be seamless. And so we've been in the business of doing web security as a cloud service for 10 years with our other products, our existing secure web gateway in the cloud, and other offerings that we'll be announcing fairly soon this summer. The key thing there is you have to do a couple of things. One is you have to make sure that the user doesn't have to do anything special. The moment you introduce new ways that they have to go about using the web, it doesn't work. So we focus first on making sure the user experience is completely centrally administered, that they don't have to do anything, especially on any managed devices. And if they're on BYOD environments, making it as simple as possible. Then from an architectural point of view, that's where a couple of things matter. First, something that doesn't get talked about a lot is actually where in the cloud things run. And so, for example, there's a topic called peering arrangements, which is basically what networks are your cloud providers attached to? And so historically, we have made sure that we are on tier one networks with really, really high speed links into the primary internet backbone. So that ends up being sort of the high order bit in how you provide a really fast service. Then secondly, it comes down to how do you design your web proxies, your application proxies and your scanners and things like that. And so what we've done in our platform is really to, as I was mentioning, to break apart the old products, to pull out, again, sort of the crown jewels of the technology. And we've been doing this for, as I said, 10 years. And so we've got some really highly optimized technology for doing web scanning, for doing firewalling, for doing intrusion prevention, for doing URL filtering. And then turning those into a set of extensible microservices that then are able to really work together. So when you build up a policy that says, all right, these users are allowed to get to these classes of websites with these types of controls on them over these links, instead of having to do what, say, some of the early technologies did, which was to do what's called service chaining, of simply passing stuff to a firewall, to a web gateway, to this, to that, instead really breaking down all the barriers and avoiding all of the latency that comes from passing everything around, and instead doing that at the service level within the cloud itself, so that you're able to dramatically reduce the latency or the delays in getting, from when the user, clicks on a link to when the pages start to appear.
Let's go a bit, I guess, deeper and understand what's the options to connect from an office, and then we'll talk about options to connect as an end user.
Sure. So we support a variety of different mechanisms. So today, our focus right now, and what a lot of people are looking at, is how to connect from branch sites that don't require any security hardware. So the ability to have a router that they've gotten from their ISP to automatically connect to Dynamic Edge Protection, route all of the traffic up there, and deal with it that way, or to use whatever legacy customer premises equipment that they've already got. So you know, they may have branch infrastructure where they have old firewalls that they don't want to replace, and they're not using them really for security. They're using them for really traffic flow as a, basically a really smart router. That's sort of the first way. The second way is that we have some fairly robust and mature connectivity software that laptop users can use to connect to the web proxy services that are up there in the cloud, and that we are enhancing later this year to then also provide the ability for all traffic to then go up through the SASE cloud service and to do all of this transparently.
So before we go to the endpoint, I wanted to just stop on the office. I'm guessing when you say firewalls and routers, I can do GRE or IPsecNLs?
Yep, IPsec, GRE. We also will be incorporating a technology that we use in our existing Secure Web Gateway as a service offering that we call Easy Connect, that allows devices such as our firewalls to really seamlessly connect. Basically, it also has the best of both worlds, IPsec and GRE.
Any limitation on traffic bandwidth from GRE or IPsec?
No. The biggest barrier tends to be just the organization's ability to set up GRE or IPsec. IPsec tends to be a little trickier than GRE, although it's a lot more capable. Every tunnel and customers can have multiple tunnels, supports up to 10 gigabits per second. And as mentioned, people can have multiple tunnels set up as well. So it's we haven't run into any issues yet of any bandwidth.
For the SD-WAN providers, do you guys have any way to provision, work better with the other SD-WAN vendors?
So what we are doing right now is the initial focus is to provide the security that is needed on top of SD-WAN, because raw SD-WAN by itself doesn't provide security. It provides privacy, encryption of traffic, but that's not security. You need the ability to keep intruders out of every location. You need the ability to protect the use of web content, and you need the ability to protect data used in cloud apps. So we have that. Now, we have, as a company, Forcepoint has, in fact, some of the largest scale SD-WAN deployments in the world. We have customers managing thousands of sites from literally a single pane of glass with a single set of policies. This technology will be coming into the platform fairly soon. So in fact, we will provide the ability to manage policies for SD-WAN. And that will include the ability to have multiple ISP lines and use them. But more interestingly, to also do things like doing fast path routing among sites, where you don't necessarily want to send all the traffic up into the cloud and back down again. There are, for example, if you've got VoIP applications, voice over IP, you may want to spin up a direct connection from one branch to another branch, do that phone call, and then tear it down so that you don't have to send it up all the way.
In this case, I'm guessing you're able to do high availability and switch connection because you control the SD-WAN in the cloud in case of one thing going down.
Yeah, we will, because we also, and in that model, we'll offer this notion of this cloud, this edge connector. Essentially, don't even think of it as an appliance. Don't think of it as a router. Think of it almost as a dongle for the cloud. It's something hanging off the cloud, and its job is to, again, execute the SD-WAN line management or to do site-to-site connectivity management completely under the direction of the cloud. And that's, so we have this technology that works in a classic secure SD-WAN environment today, and we're going to be bringing this into the SASE platform so that, again, it's fully integrated into those uniform policies.
Great.
And then extending that beyond SD-WAN to also, you know, being able to do the same thing for local enforcement, for places where you really need, you know, firewalling happening at the local site, or you really, for compliance reasons, need a web proxy running locally at that site. The key is you don't want any of the policy, any of the data storage, any of that to be done on site. You want that to all be seamlessly done up in the cloud. And that's where DEP is going. That's, you know, one of the key things that will set it apart from every other SASE out there.
Okay, endpoint. So you mentioned there is an agent on the endpoint as well. And you mentioned about you going to do all ports and protocols?
Yes. So we have endpoint technology today that provides sort of easy connectivity, you know, up to the cloud service for web-based traffic, which is about 90% of the traffic that we see. This endpoint technology isn't just your run-of-the-mill, you know, proxy enforcement that, you know, you'll see most SASE vendors talk about having an endpoint. And usually what that endpoint is doing is enforcing the use of a pack file in order to direct web traffic up to the proxy. Our endpoint actually does a whole lot more. It also has data protection enforcement, essentially super DLP capabilities built in. It has user activity monitoring capabilities built in. You know, it has, you know, CASB connectivity and things built in as well. And so one of the things that we're doing with this, what we call a unified endpoint, is also we're going to be building in the ability to forward all port traffic, all protocol traffic up to dynamic edge protection so that you can have, you know, that same web plus network security up there in the cloud.
Is anything prevent me to uninstall or disable the endpoint and just go directly to the internet?
So the endpoint agent is designed for managed devices. So typically what most of our customers do, because this is already used very widely, it basically powers all of our different cloud services. What they typically do is they deploy it with control anti-tampering controls to prevent the end user from uninstalling it or turning it off.
Okay. Also, a lot of the time, people, customers, and myself also asking, can I do conditional access? For example, if there is no antivirus on my laptop, I don't have the patches, can you prevent me to accessing the internet or steer me to somewhere else, for example?
So, to be honest, the notion of splitting your controls so that some things go directly to the internet and other things don't. We're looking at it. Candidly, what a lot of customers have been telling us is they'd rather have all that traffic going through, even if they specifically put the rules in there, you know, to sort of fast path the known applications and known sort of sites for downloading patches and things like that. So they tend to prefer a solution that, you know, solves the real problem, which might be, well, will it introduce delays or not, rather than introducing the complexity of, well, sometimes the traffic goes directly.
I guess the question is not the traffic. I guess the question more if I can do posture assessment on my laptop and design you're going to have access or not have access based on your laptop. Posture, patching, antivirus, part of the domain.
So we're looking at whether to have that conditional access or not. Again, most of the feedback we've gotten is people, CISOs and others are actually scared of the notion of having that kind of conditional access because they want to make sure that all of the traffic is going is under that they have visibility and they have control over it. You know, The key, though, is to do it in a way that the cloud service doesn't get in the way of that and slow it down. So what we're doing is really looking at how do we optimize the cloud service to make sure it doesn't get in the way.
I guess the last question is about connectivity here is, do you OEM your solution to someone else, or maybe you're part of ISP, or any other way to consume this, the outbound browsing of Forcepoint in different ways?
So these services are offered in a variety of different ways. People can buy subscriptions through a partner from Forcepoint. We also are in discussions with a variety of different MSSPs around the world. Forcepoint has been selling through MSSPs for a number of years with a variety of different solutions. And so what we anticipate is that customers will be buying SASE in a bunch of different ways. Some customers will be buying it through an MSSP, which may or may not be their telco or their ISP. Others will be buying from an integration partner who would be bundling it, for example, with a variety of other IT services. So we see really flexibility is going to be critical here. In the long term, the design that we're taking is, to ensure that cloud services, can be integrated into a variety of different cloud environments. So, for example, we anticipate having some of our essentially the edge connectivity capabilities built in directly into various telco and MSSP networks around the world. That will do a combination of fast path routing for the service and also tying into the MSSP's infrastructure for doing more automation, both in terms of things like provisioning and out in terms of making use of all of the telemetry, all the risk scores and things like that that our platform creates. Because that's one of the other aspects that really that we're bringing to the picture here that is fundamentally different is that notion of using behavior and using risk, both to power our own applications, but actually we already have, I mentioned identity providers like Okta and Ping, who are using that risk scoring technology to do things like step up authentication so that, as someone's using in the normal course of things, they're going along fine, say, oh, okay, yeah, they were authenticated and all of the, the proper things are happening. But if someone starts, doing stuff that causes their risk scores to go up, ultimately, not just in our system, but even the identity infrastructure can recognize, I'm gonna do additional levels of authentication here just to double check that this really is who the user says they are, and perhaps even change the types of authentication that are used just to make sure that you're not dealing with a situation of stolen credentials. So that's where SASE isn't just about the stuff that we got labeled there in the dark green, the web network and cloud and data security, but it's really about the arrows in and the arrows out there. It's part of a larger system that organizations are going to be able to use to really change how they implement security throughout their organization. In ways that are just bluntly a whole lot simpler to really operate.
So you're going to go take it up a notch, I guess, and we're talking more about some of the controls. As part of outbound browsing, you basically, in a way, talking about security web gateway. We took some of the definition from Gartner about what security web gateway should be doing, and we're going to talk about this. And I guess the first idea is URL filtering by categorization. Tell me a bit more how you guys are doing this, if it's yours, if you're OEMing this.
Well, Forcepoint in one of its predecessor companies, WebSense, basically invented URL filtering, and so really built the market for it. So our technology for doing URL categorization is really the best in the industry, flat out. Stand behind that statement any day. And so this is using our threat seeker categorization and threat intelligence engine. This is pretty cool because we've got a global network, threat intelligence network, that's analyzing billions of different touch points every day. We've got a global research team that curates the threat feeds and analyzes them, looking for things of note. And what's particularly interesting about that, because every organization will say, "Oh, we've got a threat team," is our XLabs is the name of the organization. XLabs isn't just about threat analysis. It actually has on staff some of the industry's leading behavioral scientists, and looking at ways in which threats correlate to behaviors as well. So that what we see as the future here is not just looking at the classic, okay, this threat is doing this on the machine, that's bad, but ultimately, the way you're going to detect things is not just to look for indicators of compromise, because in some ways that's after the fact, that's being reactive. Instead, what you're going to start doing is looking what some people have started to call left of breach, think of a timeline, all right, and start looking instead for indicators of behavior, IOBs, not IOCs. And these indicators of behavior will be a predictor of risk. And with that risk-based approach, you're able in many more cases to prevent the breach from happening in the first place. And that's really where things are going, because at this point, just about every enterprise has come to accept that it's a never ending game of chase with the bad guys, and at some point you have to assume they're going to find a way to get in, even if it's going around all of your defenses using social engineering to subvert people, the classic USB fob in the parking lot type of issue, and done in more modern ways. And so that's where you have to look beyond the old approach of viewing security as being castle walls and a moat, around the crown jewels and the people working inside the stone building, which is what a lot of the old fashioned web defenses and network defenses were doing. And instead, you basically have to take a zero trust approach to connectivity, and to say, look, threats may be anywhere. They may be on the inside, they may be on the outside. You have to be able to really understand in every single situation who is doing what, where, and when. And that leads you, again, back to behaviors. And that's why we view behavioral intelligence is actually central to doing really strong threat protection.
Focused on the end user, the behavioral analytics of yours.
It's around everything that's happening in the network. And so it's actions taken by or on behalf of users. But one of the things that emerged in the last couple of years is went from talking about user behavior analytics to user and entity behavioral analytics, because programs programs are not people too. Not going to say that. Programs operate on behalf of people, and so being able to look at what's happening there, mostly because it's often associated with people. Looking at the behavior of data, because again, that can be very telling. And so, you need to connect the dots all throughout. And so, you know, examples that we give when we talk about telemetry, you know, it's not just focused on, you know, okay, well, you can keep track of whether, you know, whether Fred over there was going to bad sites and then in the future maybe do things differently. But that's almost too trivial to even contemplate. Much more interesting is, again, to integrate across many different sources of telemetry. So looking at, you know, what email links did Fred get? What email links did Fred click on? All right, when did that happen? When was Fred working? When was he logged in? You know, in some environments for people who are working, you know, once they do stop working from home and go back in, you know, for some organizations, the ability to correlate to, you know, physical presence becomes really important. If the system sees you, you know, logging in and geolocates your IP address and it shows up coming from Europe at the same time that your physical security says that you've just badged in from California, well, there's a problem there. You know, you can't be in two places at once. You know, and that's a trivial example, but cascade that across many different applications, looking at what's happening in the cloud, you know, across email, look at it at what's happening in physical systems, look what's happening on the web, look at what's happening in cloud apps. When you integrate all of that together, you get a much better picture of the overall risk that someone presents to the organization. And that's, again, you'll hear from Forcepoint over and over that we believe that is the future of security, is that behavior-driven security.
What would be the way you will dynamically block bad URLs, right? We all know how we can actually post something or prepare some URLs that will be categorized as clean, and then we can weaponize them later on. So yep. You mentioned your threat intel and threat team, but if they went over something and they already deemed it as safe and gave it low risk, you know, how would they reevaluate it later on?
So nothing is ever safe. And what we recommend to people is, because part of this is our policy mechanisms are very, very flexible. Typically the way people go about it is they start by saying, okay, well, if we start at the top and think of, yeah, there are a bunch of categories that generally recognized as safe. There are a bunch that are generally recognized as unsafe. And then there's a whole ton in the middle that you just don't know. Either sites aren't categorized or you just don't have a decision about that. The hard part's usually in the middle. And so in terms of managing stuff in the middle, that's where URL filtering based on reputation is merely the first of many steps. You know, then you almost always combine that with things like remote browser isolation that building into the platform as well, so that you can, for example, choose to have particular traffic, for example, to an unknown site that isn't categorized, because our system is literally continually updating its database, you know, all the time. If it hits a domain that, for example, was recently registered, that may be suspicious or is unknown, then invoke remote browser isolation to ensure that the traffic doesn't actually go to the end device, to the end user's browser, or combine it with ongoing deep inspections. In fact, normally what we'll do is we'll encourage people to turn on inspection of all web traffic to look at any file that's passed through the web traffic, whether as an explicit download or as part of just HTTP traffic that's in transit, applying a variety of different scanners. So we've got built-in anti-malware scanners into the cloud platform. We also have use some of the industry's leading zero-day sandboxing technology as well for being able to, again, shunt things that look unusual. The thing that will likely differentiate vendors out there, and what your listeners should probably look at, is and you brought this up, is how do you go about deciding that something is good, deciding it's bad, or as you kind of work through the stages of evaluating it, either insulating the end user from any damage while still providing access, or performing sort of deeper and deeper inspection that you may not necessarily want to do on everything all of the time. And so that's where, you know, to be honest, some of the some of the things that make us different are part of that threat intelligence layer as well, is how we manage that pipeline of different types of inspection, and how we give people the flexibility to control, you know, sort of by default, how much inspection do you start with, and then how do you down select on different traffic patterns to avoid the overhead of trying to scan every single thing every single time.
Makes sense. So how would you protect from malicious file downloads?
So we've got built in into the system a pipeline that uses a combination of methods. You know, at the very start, as we were talking about, you know, domain-based things are effectively a reputation service. So we have that. We also have reputation feeds based on sort of known files that we compare against. I have built in, you know, AV or other anti-malware scanners directly built in. If something gets through that, but you know, again, if a site looks like it's either unusual, or if the subscriber has said no, I want to be particularly careful, you know, take anything that's from an uncategorized type of site, and general browsing in that case like that, you know, also feed anything that merits it through that 0-day sandbox to look for, you know, any ransomware, other things that would escape a signature-based malware system. And so we have essentially a multi-stage pipeline built in that does that different levels of scanning. And again, controllable by policy.
Makes sense. And how it would detect and block malicious content hosted within a website?
Yeah, so malicious content comes in and you know, users browsing to it, it ends up going through dynamic edge protection. As that HTTP or HTTPS traffic comes in, part of what our engine does is it knows the structure of, you know, HTTP, HTTPS, and all of the associated protocols, essentially cracks it open. You know, anything that is a file, and HTTP transmits files in a variety of ways, both explicitly and implicitly. And you know, as that file is transiting the service, it gets inspected by, you know, first the malware, the reputation engines, the malware engines, and then ultimately, if appropriate, the sandbox as well.
And so, if this is Flash, for example, Flash so, banners.
Yeah. So again, the way HTTP works is that Flash attachment looks like, you know, it's transmitted through HTTP, you know, effectively as a file, and so that will get scanned inside DEP. The other thing that our secure web gateway, you know, has a long history of doing, and that we're also in time going to be bringing into dynamic edge protection, is also being able to do categorization of unknown websites based on the contents of the web page itself. And so, you know, for a lot of SASE systems out there, you'll find that all they can do categorizations of the URLs and of the domain names, but if they're faced with something unknown, you know, they don't know, we have technology that we'll be bringing to bear down the line that actually is able to analyze, for example, the contents on the page, not just, and in addition to scanning you know, things like that, that Flash effectively, think of it as an attachment to a web page, which most systems can scan that. More interestingly, there's a deeper level of scanning that, that can be done as well. We've been doing that for a number of years in our Secure Web Gateway.
Can you already is a cloud service. Elaborate a bit more about ShadowWiki? Would you create any
report? I'm sorry about that.
Can you elaborate a bit more about ShadowWiki and what kind of protection or reporting you can help with sanctioned and unsanctioned apps?
Sure. One of the things that we've been doing over the last several years is because we have really good CASB technology, you know, we've got a database of many thousands of applications out there, and not just the ability to recognize them, but also to understand, you know, what are some of the risk attributes associated with those different applications. So, you know, ShadowIT today is basically a feature of almost every layer of your network stack. Your firewalls have ShadowIT reporting, your web gateways have it, your CASBs have it. What we have done is to really share, you know, that risk information so that we're able to gather together and on a per user basis be able to say, you know, here are the websites, here are the cloud apps that users went to, and you know, here is the level of risk associated with those web apps, so that you're able to not just, you know, it's one thing to say, you know, again, Fred went out to BlueDogAppSharing.com. Okay. Well, is that good or is that bad? And what our CASB technology does is be able to say, okay, here's a report of, you know, what are all the sites that Fred went to, but more importantly, let's rank those by level of risk so you can find out, oh, wait a minute, you know, here are some apps that maybe they're not all that risky, but they have alternatives that are more mainstream that maybe even the company has already standardized on. We can go off and tell Fred, hey, did you know that, you know, we have OneDrive for doing file sharing? And that's why we'd really rather that you don't file share on Dropbox. We'd rather you do that. Or, you know, yeah, we're not using Gmail. We're using O365 or vice versa. The difference then is to take that to the next level by being able to go beyond that and say, okay, yeah, these couple of apps that you're using over here, you may not have known it, but they are known, for example, to not protect data that you store in there. So if you put any company files in there, those files are at risk of being stolen or compromised. Did you know about that? And it, our customers tell us that you know, they use that to then go and help educate their users to be able to go, because in almost all cases they go, no, I didn't know that. I just, you know, a friend told me about it and it was helping me get my job done faster. And so I thought I was doing a good thing. And so it's again, not about, it's back to that notion of the old school approaches of always block or always allow, really just don't work in the modern world.
And talking about blocking, one of the popular topics is, can I do bandwidth shaping? Can I help to minimize the YouTube usage or something similar to this?
Yeah, so we have part of the granularity of, for example, our URL filtering and our filtering capabilities in general is, it's not just at the high level, it's actually down at a very very granular level. So you're able to say, you know, well, let's allow these types of channels, but don't allow the, you know, other parts of certain cloud applications. So Facebook's a good example. With customers who might say, all right, well, you know, our marketing team is allowed to access it.
But would you go, Jim, to say you can only use YouTube, but only for 1 megabyte? You cannot go to use the full throttle?
So what we tend to do with our SD-WAN technology is more to be able to control what links it would go over and then to do quality of service. So with our SD-WAN technology, we have people who would say, okay, you can access YouTube, but we're going to apply this quality service, including, you know, this bandwidth limitation for YouTube there. So, and these are examples of the SD-WAN policies that we'll be bringing into dynamic edge protection that we're already using out there and in our other technologies.
We have another two topics about Security Web Gateway that I believe may take a lot of time, is DLP and inline CASB. And DLP by itself can probably take an hour. And I know you guys doing DLP for a long time. So maybe if you can just say in 1-2 minutes about the DLP and we will move on to some other topics.
Yep. So what many organizations are finding these days is that they've been so focused on how do you keep bad guys out? How do you keep the bad stuff out? That now they're beginning to turn their focus to, well, that's only half the picture. How do you keep the good stuff in? And in fact, in many cases, that's just as important. Or as what we've found, the real damage of a breach, of something getting in, isn't, these days, the risk is not so much that systems get corrupted. It's that data gets exfiltrated. And so, it's keeping the bad guys out is really about also saying, how do you keep the good stuff in it? DLP for many years has been the technology that's used to look at the way data is used and apply controls to it, to block people from attaching sensitive documents to email or to uploading them into websites and so forth like that. We did a couple of key things there. We are one of the top vendors in that space, and have been recognized in Magic Quadrants so forth for years. But more interestingly, how it plays in this new cloud world is that we're seeing a couple of different things. The importance of being able to enforce data protection policies outside of the normal enterprise walls is more important than ever. You were bringing up working from home.
Yes.
The other aspect is cloud-based apps. Now, most data and most business is actually stored and conducted respectively outside of the traditional network. And so things like, I prefer to call it data protection than DLP.
I think we need to do a separate session about DLP and CASB. We'll just take a good time.
But here's where they actually all converge. And this is, again, what makes SASE so interesting is that it's not just about saying, okay, well, you're protecting web traffic or you're protecting email traffic or you're protecting FTP traffic or whatever else. Yeah. What we're starting to see is that convergence of, you have inbound traffic, you have outbound traffic, and it's really important to be able to watch for, malicious stuff coming in, but sensitive stuff going out in the same ways, in the same channels. And that's where what you're going to see is the SASE vendors out there all looking to provide some form of data protection, whether it's DLP, whether it's lighter weight stuff, that's to be seen. Forcepoint's take on this is that this is in fact fundamental, and it's been something that, as we've talked to people around the world, has been one of the number one requests, is to have not just the lightweight DLP that you see a lot of the web filtering services that are out there using, but true enterprise class, really sophisticated data recognition that can work with the endpoint, can work with the cloud apps, do data discovery and do data enforcement. So critically important.
How customers can actually POC your solution? Do they need to install a complex software on servers, provisioning, or there's a quick way?
Yeah, I mean it's a cloud service. So what we typically see a couple of different models as people do both trials and proof of concepts. It's as simple as If you've got a branch site or a lab where, in fact, a lot of distributed organizations basically simulate a branch site, within a test lab, looking at the left side of the picture here, simply shooting all of the traffic for that site up to dynamic edge protection and then trying it out. We're going to be rolling out fairly soon, a new set of capabilities directed at endpoints. And so for that, we'll also see a lot of people simply, put our agent on a laptop, and get an account on dynamic edge protection and go set up policies and go sit at Starbucks.
Sounds like the agent is the best way to do it. We spoke about technology partnership a bit. Can you tell us if you guys have any technology partners that you work a lot? Maybe it's an endpoint solution like EDR or SIEMS.
So we have a variety of different partners and a variety of different integrations. So the ability, for example, to work with basically any major SIEM out there. The architecture that we have, for example, can put log data into S3 buckets, and every SIEM out there on the planet can consume that. I mentioned identity providers such as Okta and Ping, who are actively using our risk-based technology already. We also have an ecosystem of partners for doing things. I mentioned remote browser isolation. We actually have been working with several different vendors in that space and provided integrations with them that people could use. Moving forward, we're going to be expanding that. We've got a page up on our website that lists all the different technology partners that we provide. And of course, we also have integration with a variety of the Azure ecosystems and the AWS ecosystems as well.
So, that's one of the most important questions. What would be the three reports or metrics that can show the before and the after state when I'm using your technology? And it would be something that a CISO would take to the board and talk about.
Yeah. So, it varies so much from customer to customer. Ultimately, what they're looking for is some understanding of what people are doing, and of course, did you stop anything bad? Now, that's non-deterministic because an organization may get hit every couple of hours by bad stuff, or they may, go weeks without anyone tripping on anything bad. And so what we see people often looking for is, and this is where we're really optimizing our dashboards and reporting, around making sure that people can understand, how are my users using the cloud, using the web? So being able to understand traffic patterns, application usage, you brought up risk, shadow IT, and understanding the risks associated there. And so the first step ends up being, how are my resources being consumed? What applications, what network links, and so forth?
Level of assessment of the current state.
Yeah. And so, being able to look, and in many cases, that actually can tell them things that they would have to look across multiple tools to do. So the thing about a SASE platform is that since it's providing it not just a centralized way of providing control across a distributed organization, it's also providing visibility across that organization. Its uses go beyond the classic, here's the list of malware that I stopped. And while that's really important, what we're seeing is it's really evolving to where, ultimately where we see it going is it's of course going to be, here are the bad things that happened, but rather than being black and white, it's back to that spectrum. And it's going to be, here are the sets of risky behaviors that, that we saw. Here are users that are, you know, are posing different types of risk. And that can be, you know, from actions they're taking, or it may represent personal risk. It may represent other things where the organization wants to be able to understand. And so what we're anticipating is we're actually going to see a very significant shift in what those key metrics and those key reports are over the next 2 years as the behavioral intelligence, you know, really becomes a factor, because it really changes the game from just looking at, you know, how many bytes went where and how many pieces of malware did I stop, to, you know, what, yeah, were people more productive? Were people, you know, safe? Is data safe? And how do you measure that as well? And that's where that ability, you know, to have not just your classic edge protection, you know, types of you know, web and network security, and even CASB is often lumped in there, but that integration of data protection and even user activity, you know, monitoring and user protection really are coming together. That ultimately, you know, it's all going to interlock.
Thank you. And yeah, we actually on the finish line of our kind of official interview, and we want to kind of open the stage for any other topics. I have a couple of questions I wanted to ask, but is there anything else you want to bring before we ask you some of the other questions?
I think to me, there are a couple of key things that are exciting about SASE, and one is, yeah, of course, the convergence of things in the cloud and the operational benefits that brings. But that's just the beginning. And in fact, when you look at how vendors are going to differentiate, certainly there will be differentiation in the breadth of security that people bring into this converged model. But that's really going to be the starting point. I think the other dimensions that, yeah, you know, really are going to be pretty novel, are going to be the depth to which people are able to provide that security. And so, you know, going beyond just, is everything in the cloud, is everything on-prem, but what visibility do you have all the way from the cloud all the way down to the endpoint? You know, can you do enforcement at different points, you know, based on whatever is most appropriate for the business? So that depth is going to be just as important, and it's going to actually be a key part of operating in a hybrid world, which is what we are. As much as we're in the cloud era, it's a hybrid world, and you know, and that's so important, and that tends to get glossed over in sort of the rush to the cloud, that the cloud is the right place for the management plane. Definitions of policies, all of your analytics need to use the elasticity in the cloud so that you can apply the horsepower that you need, the dashboards, the reporting, all of it absolutely in the cloud. But where the enforcement is actually done should be based on the business and the people and the data that's involved. And if you do it right, it's all seamless and it doesn't matter. The third aspect that, you know, we've touched on, but that really will be, to me, the next frontier in cybersecurity, is this notion of how do you use behavioral intelligence, and how does that change the way in which you provide security of people, of data, you know, of infrastructure and you know, the edge that connects people to that data. And I'm a if you haven't guessed by now, a very firm believer that we're on the cusp of, you know, a really significant and perhaps one of the biggest changes in how security is thought about and done in the last 20 years. I think the use of behavioral intelligence will be that that big of a change across the board, and not just because Forcepoint's involved in it. Lots of companies are racing to try to build behavioral intelligence in, and we've only just begun to scratch the surface on how it can, you know, really make things better.
So you envision every digital operation of ours will be profiled and analyzed?
Yes, and the key will be then you'll see more and more focus on privacy by design. And so in doing this, making sure it's done in a way that starts from a premise of, yeah, it's all, the end goal is to protect people, it's to protect data, and privacy is an absolute must and cannot be violated. And so, you know, that requires a lot of thought. I'll be honest, that's hard. We've spent lots of years working on it, and, you know, we're at the forefront of it. You know, we're expecting to see a lot of other vendors, you know, working on that as well. And the good news is I think companies around the world are realizing that that's something that they have to demand, is a focus on privacy that goes hand in hand with security, because you can't give up one to have the other.
Thank you. I have one question, probably last question. What's your take on DNS security to inspect the DNS traffic and not just the URL filtering?
I think it's a component of different types of protection. We have, for example, technology for, you know, validating DNS traffic and looking for misuse of the protocols and so forth. You know, we don't really see a lot of customers asking, you know, for that, and certainly not as the foundation for their security platforms moving forward. I know some vendors are starting from that basis, but we just see that as just one of many elements in security.
Thank you. It was a great time together. I don't have any more questions. Dimitri, you?
Thank you, Jim. I appreciate your knowledge and sharing it with us.
Please remember to subscribe to our podcast and join us for our next episode.